This is Word of Mouth from NHPR. I'm Virginia Prescott. It has been a busy couple of weeks for the Supreme Court, and with most of the attention focused on the historic same-sex marriage decision and the court's decision to leave a key provision of the Affordable Care Act intact. Another case with potentially far-reaching implications is getting lost in the shuffle. Ilya Soman is a professor at the George Mason University School of Law and a contributor to the Washington Post blog The Volokh Conspiracy. That's where we found his recent post, Property Owners Prevail in Raisin Takings Case. Ilya, welcome to Word of Mouth.
Thank you very much for having me.
So although rooted in the Constitution, this case does begin with a federal program that's been around since the 1930s. Tell us a little bit about the U.S. Department of Agriculture's California Raisin Marketing Order.
Well, the law authorizing the program has been around since the 1930s. The program itself dates back to 1949. And basically, the purpose of this program is to raise raisin prices to benefit raisin producers at the expense of people like you and me, most likely consumers of raisins. Essentially, what they say is that if production of raisins in a given year rises beyond a certain point, then the producers and handlers of raisins have to turn over a certain proportion of the crop to the federal government, which then disposes of them in such a way that they won't enter the U.S. market for raisins, therefore keeping the prices high.
The plaintiffs in the case are the Horns. They are grape farmers from California. Now, what was their case against the Department of Agriculture?
The basic idea is very simple. The Fifth Amendment says that if the government takes private property, they must pay just compensation for it. And in this case, the government was taking the raisins that had previously belonged to the Horns and other raisin producers, and raisins pretty clearly are a form of property, and it seems like all property of that kind would be covered by the Fifth Amendment.
So this was not a case where a number of raisin producers banded together. The Horns really stuck their necks out a bit. Now, why are other farmers not in favor of this or not willing to go that far?
So I'm not an expert on the raisin industry, but as I understand it, there are some of the raisin farmers who clearly believe they are net beneficiaries of this program. They may lose some raisins, but they benefit more from having higher raisin prices. The Horns calculate that if they could sell more raisins, even at lower prices, they would ultimately be better off. So as in many industries, attempts to form a cartel can be undermined when there are differing interests as between different market participants. But here you have, in effect, the government serving as the enforcer of a cartel. If a private organization tried to create a cartel like this on its own and function as an enforcer, the government would almost certainly go after them under the antitrust laws. But because the government is itself the one that's doing it, the situation is legally different, though economically almost exactly the same.
But the government does not pay for these raisins. They take them.
That's right. It is the case that in some cases when they sell them, sometimes the raisin producers get some share of the profits, but they certainly don't get the full market value of the raisins, the level of compensation that would be required under the Fifth Amendment.
Now, I mean, this was kind of a surprise to me that the U.S. government steps in to control prices of a commodity, in effect, enforce a cartel. Any other products fall under this kind of policy?
There are a number of other agricultural products that have similar cartels. More broadly, this is a holdover of an idea that was very popular during the New Deal. In the 1930s, many people, including many people in the Roosevelt administration, believed that the Great Depression was caused in part, at least, by overproduction, and they somehow believed that if you limit production, then maybe the economy would right itself and things would get better, and certainly producers would be better off. Virtually no serious economist believes this sort of theory today, but some programs established in that era continue to exist to this day because they benefit well-organized special interest groups, and most of the general public, at least until this raisins case, didn't even realize that these programs exist and that the raisins that you buy in the supermarket are sometimes more expensive as a result of the program.
So is this the first significant challenge to that program since the Roosevelt era?
It's certainly the first under the Takings Clause. I don't know enough to say that there's never been any challenge of any other kind.
Well, the court did rule 8-1 in favor of the Horns. Now, what is the key takeaway from this decision?
So the key takeaway is that this is, in fact, a taking. The government had argued that it's not really a taking for two reasons. One is they said, well, this involves personal property as opposed to real property. Real property is property and land. Personal property is property in most physical objects, including raisins. And they said, well, the takings clause doesn't really protect personal property as much as it protects real property. The lower court bought this very dangerous argument, but 8 out of 9 Supreme Court justices did not, and it's fortunate that they didn't. The second argument that the federal government really relied on heavily is they said, well, these people, they shouldn't be complaining. They actually benefit from the taking. As Justice Scalia put it, they're actually ingrates. But the fact that they benefit in some ways doesn't mean a taking didn't occur in the first place. At most, it might mean that the benefit that they got should affect the level of compensation they get. So if either of these two arguments had prevailed, the government would have had a free hand to endanger a lot of property rights that go well beyond raisins. Certainly that would have happened if the court had said that personal property generally gets less protection under the Constitution, and if they had said that there is no taking so long as the owner of the property benefits in some way, then the door would have been opened to the government in effect saying, well, we're going to take your house away from you, but it's not a real taking because we'll give you, say, 5 or 10% of the proceeds from the sale of the house.
So victory for the Horns. Who else stands to gain from or who is celebrating this victory?
I think people who care about constitutional property rights generally are celebrating. Even if you don't care very much about raisins, you have reason perhaps to be concerned about the security of property rights generally. Also, if this decision ends up eliminating this raisin cartel and other similar ones, then consumers have reason to celebrate that the prices of their food will be lower, and that might not matter too much to people in my income class who can easily afford slightly higher or even significantly higher prices for food, but for lower and middle class people, it'll matter more.
Will we likely see a rapid decline in raisin prices as a result?
I don't know about a rapid decline. I think if this program does end as a result, and it's not completely certain that it will, but if it does, then at least in some years there will be significantly lower raisin prices because this program only kicks in certain years where raisin production is unusually high. So in those years, consumers will at least benefit from lower prices. It's also possible that in the long run, this will incentivize higher levels of raisin production because I would think, I'm not an expert in this industry, but I would think that if producers know that if they produce more than a certain amount, that they're likely to just lose those additional raisins, that probably reduces their incentives to produce more in the first place.
Looking at the composition of the Roberts Court, what's the legacy of a case like this, which has dealt with some, you know, citizens versus government cases?
So I think property rights questions sometimes divide judges along right-left lines, with conservatives and libertarians saying we want stronger protection for property rights, liberals being skeptical of it. Here, because you have an 8-1 decision, this is actually one of a series of decisions over the last several years where the court has actually ruled in a much more unified way that in some areas the government is not sufficiently respecting people's property rights under the takings clause. Some of that simply involves relatively extreme actions and positions taken by the federal government in various cases that even the liberal justices could not accept. But some of it also, I think, involves a new seriousness by the Supreme Court generally about protecting property rights after an era when, for a long time, property rights had essentially a kind of second-class status in the court's jurisprudence.
Well, Ilya Soman, thank you for speaking with us.
Thank you very much for having me.
Ilya Soman, he's a professor at the George Mason University School of Law. He's also a contributor to the Washington Post blog, The Volokh Conspiracy. He's the author of the 2015 book, The Grasping Hand, Kelo versus the City of New London and the Limits of Eminent Domain. You'll find a link to read his post from the Washington Post's Volokh Conspiracy blog on the Raisin Takings case and much more at our website, wordofmouthradio.org.